Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritam gamaya. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. May the divine lead us from the real, unreal to the real, from darkness into light, and from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. The subject for this morning's talk was printed as, "Who do you think you are?" But I changed it slightly to, "Who do we think we are?" Because we're all here together, and I want to be part of it. I am asking this question from the standpoint of the spiritual teachings as studied and practiced in the Vedanta philosophy and religion, specifically from the standpoint of Advaita Vedanta, and more specifically from the standpoint of the Ramakrishna Vivekananda tradition. All these philosophies are grounded in the ancient scriptures called the Upanishads. If we read the works of Swami Vivekananda, or Swamiji as we call him, we will come to understand that Swamiji taught nothing but the Upanishads, which declare the identity of the individual soul, Jiva, and the supreme soul, Brahman. The final word, practical to our own lives, is that we are that Brahman, Tat Tvamasi, that thou art. Whether we have realized it or not, we are identical with the Supreme Being, right here and right now, as we are. But we may say, "I don't feel like that at all. I see only, I see only me, this me." This body-mind complex. Why? Because in our present state of consciousness, we have apparent limitations or coverings and have forgotten who we truly are. Vedanta teaches that the way to uncovering the truth of our own being is to look deeply within ourselves for answers and solutions. The state of things in human condition are that by design, our senses have been turned outwards and flow into the external world, taking the mind with them. Vedanta teaches us that to remove ignorance, a spiritual seeker can choose to practice yoga, or union with the divine in all things. Today, we are focusing on Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge. However, as Swamiji says, one can realize the truth of one's being by the practice of what he calls the four yogas, namely Karma Yoga, Raja Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. The yogas can be practiced individually or collectively, according to one's temperament and evolution. Blending of the four yogas brings about a more holistic and integral approach to our spiritual practices. So with this in mind, let us ask ourselves, who do we think we are at present? Well, I am me. All right then, who is this me, Is it the body, or the senses, or the mind, or the intellect, or the ego? Are we our thoughts and actions geared only to the external, or are they geared to the internal? Think about it. Question it. What is my present state of existence? Who am I really, and what am I doing here? Or what do all these questions really mean to me? Am I at all interested in taking up spiritual life? Or am I content to live an exclusively material life, or maybe a combination of both would be good? Most people never think to ask these questions and are happy with the way of life they are living right now in the material world. But there are some people who become dissatisfied. They become dissatisfied with their lives and begin questioning, is this life as I am experiencing it now all there is? What is the purpose of life? Our Vedanta teachers say this is the moment our mental focus turns inwards and we begin to think deeply. This is the beginning of spiritual life, turning away from the material world and choosing to look deeper, to look within ourselves. We cannot deny that we exist. We cannot deny that we are aware, is it not? Think about it. Is there any time that I am not aware? Vedanta teaches, no. It tells us that being aware is the very essence of our being. It is the one light within us that illumines all things. Just as the light in this room is one and illumines all that is in this room, so the light of awareness, the light of consciousness, illumines all things and causes all to be seen. There are many things, many objects that are seen, but awareness is one. This awareness is filtered through time, space, and causation, through the senses and the mind, causing the world of objects to appear to us. If we think about this, we cannot deny that is a fact, because we are experiencing it. Each viewpoint differs from another. Each one of us has a different viewpoint. But the awareness is one. Our awareness is one. We look in a mirror and see this body. We think thoughts and express emotions. We experience the workings of the mind. But is the mirror image who we really are? Are our thoughts what we are? Is even our ego, our sense of identity, who we really are? Is the apparently limited self all there is about me? One may ask, are the eyes themselves showing us anything? Think about it. Have we realized this as a fact for ourselves, or have we simply heard about it? We may have heard about these things, but are not convinced. This is all right. Now go forward, ask more questions. Our Vedanta teachers tell us to keep asking basic questions, such as, who am I? And in asking, come to discover the truth. The truth is taught by Vedanta is that we are much more than we think we are at present. In part 2, chapter 1 of the Katha Upanishad, the god of death, Yama, instructs his pupil, the young Nachiketa. Yama says, the self-existent Brahman causes the senses to flow outwards. Hence, one looks outward and not within oneself. But some wise person, desiring immortality, turns their gaze inward and beholds the inner self. This scriptural verse explains a fundamental aspect of human perception. It states that the senses were designed to face outwards, leading people to engage with the external world, As a result, individuals remain engaged in sensory experience, mistaking the transient world for the reality. The how and why of this is a subject for another day. Let us just say it is part of our evolution that this has happened. Swami Nikilananda, a great teacher of Vedanta, comments on this verse by saying, he says, "The natural tendency of man to dwell on external objects which are other than the self is an obstacle in the path of self-realization. This is called avidya, or ignorance. Another obstacle caused by ignorance of the self is the longing to enjoy material pleasures here on earth and in heaven after death. Ignorance and desires are then the two chief obstacles to self-knowledge. Knowledge of the self alone makes one immortal." We may ask, what does all this mean to me, and how can I practice in my everyday life? First of all, we are highly encouraged to find a competent spiritual teacher so that we do not lose our way on our chosen spiritual path. Just as we seek a teacher in the secular subjects we desire to pursue, so too must we find a competent spiritual teacher if we are to succeed on the spiritual path. Really speaking, if we think about it, all things and all beings can serve as a teacher if we choose to have them do so. There is a saying, you may have heard it, "Let go and let God." If we can practice this instruction in our daily lives, then we would certainly be helped as we progress on the spiritual path. Our Vedanta teachers instruct us to regularly follow four basic spiritual practices. First, the spiritual seeker should have the capacity to discriminate, viveka, between the real and the unreal. What is permanent, lasting, and what changes in our daily lives? Next, one should exercise dispassion, or vairagya, toward worldly or heavenly enjoyments. Have a dispassionate attitude towards the fruit of one's actions, reducing attractions and aversions as encountered in everyday life. Thirdly, the six treasures, shatsampati, which include tranquility, training of the senses and the mind, withdrawal from the material objects grows subtle and causal, forbearance, and deep faith in a steady focus or one-pointedness on the spiritual ideal. Lastly is the longing for liberation, mumukshutva. That is an intense desire for spiritual enlightenment and liberation. This drives the spiritual practitioner on our spiritual quest. These four practices form the foundation for God or self-realization and the spiritual path to moksha, liberation in this very life. Again, this is a whole subject of in itself for another day or for independent study. Now, very great teacher, Swami Vivekananda, he says, take up one idea, make it one, the idea of your life. Think of it, dream of it, live on that idea. Let brain, muscles, nerves, every part of your body be full of that idea, and just leave every other idea alone. This is the way to success. We have our own beliefs, and it is best to practice one pointedly in our own tradition, but we must keep an open mind. We must keep an open heart. Our teachers tell us to learn from our experiences and spiritualize these experiences every step of the way. However much we are familiar with our chosen spiritual practices, it is good to review them, for they are essential to finding out who we really are. Take stock of what you're doing. Take stock of what you're feeling. Take stock in what you really want to do in this life. No one's saying that you can't do secular life and spiritual life. You just have to make them one. That's the most important thing. And don't be discouraged. Don't be elated, because there are distractions. And our teachers say, this is really the essential thing we need to do. You don't need to renounce the world. You just need to spiritualize it, and then everything else will drop away. But the important thing is to be bold. Swamiji says, be bold and face the truth and be one with it. Are you ready for that? Am I ready for that? We have to ask ourselves this question. There is a story in the Chandogya Upanishad. One of our modern Vedanta teachers, I won't mention his name because we don't mention names of people that are still living, but I wish I could. He's a YouTube Swami, I'll give you a hint. He says, he interprets this verse, this story. Indra, the leader of the celestial beings, and Virochana, the leader of the demons, once approached Prajapati, lord of all creatures. They were immediately told to spend 32 years practicing the disciplines of a celibate student. Scary. Only after that did Prajapati ask them the purpose of their visit. When they told him of their desire to know the Atman, the inmost self, he gave them a preliminary teaching. The teaching satisfied Virochana. He felt that it was all he needed. He felt no need to explore and examine what was told, because it seemed to confirm his own prior understanding. That's okay. But it was sadly superficial. Virochana thought of himself in terms of his body, and as he heard from Prajapati, the Atman was the self. Presto, the body is the Atman. Problem solved. But the more Indra reflected on the teaching, the more questions arose in his heart. How could the perishable body be the imperishable self? He went back for clarification. Prajapati made Indra undergo more moral and physical disciplines for another 32 years, at the end of which he imparted to Indra a deep teaching on the Atman. Indra was again assailed by doubts, and he returned to Prajapati to get his doubts resolved. Indra had to undergo similar disciplines for another 32 years before receiving any teaching from Prajapati. When Indra's heart was still not satisfied and craved for greater clarity, he was made to stay and practice moral and spiritual disciplines for only 5 more years, at the end of which Prajapati, now finding Indra to have made himself fully competent, gave him the highest knowledge. At long last, Indra not only understood the Atman intellectually, but experienced his own identity with the Atman. He reached the goal of all human experience, namely self-realization. Inder realized his own true self beyond the body, the mind, the senses, and the ego. All of Indra's doubts were dispelled, and the knots of ignorance binding his heart were cut forever. This story illustrates some important points, says this very important person that I'm quoting. This story illustrates some very important points. First, it emphasizes the need for competence, adhikara, to know and realize spiritual truths. It is significant that Prajapati did not even ask Indra and Virochana the purpose of their visit until they had spent 32 years under his discipline. Why 32 years? I don't know. The number does not matter, except to convey the idea that without sufficient preparation, we cannot really benefit from a teaching. A seed planted in a barren and infertile soil cannot fructify unless the soul is prepared well with water and adequate nutrients. Secondly, the story makes an obvious point that there are differences in the aptitudes and capacities of those seeking knowledge. No two people are alike. Indra and Virochana were quite different from one another. What made sense to Virochana made no sense to Indra. Another important point the story stresses is that the knowledge gained is directly proportional to the fitness of the student. Virochana could get only what he could understand and assimilate according to his capacity, which was rudimentary. Hence, his knowledge remained superficial. Indra's case was different. After repeated disciplines and deep reflection, which increased his capacity and deepened his understanding, Indra became fit to receive the highest knowledge, and Prajapati gave it to Indra after assisting his competence. Yet another factor has the value of questioning. Indra's questions revealed the direction of Prajapati's questions revealed the direction of his thinking and the roadblocks in his reasoning. The quality of the questions we ask depends on the clarity of our minds. As our understanding deepens, our questions become clearer and more refined. Good teachers seldom spoon-feed their students. They don't give answers, but provide hints so that the students can make up their own minds and discover on their own and achieve their own breakthroughs. Lastly, the story also shows that it is possible to lead a student to the highest truth in a phased manner, step by step. Provided that the student aspires to go higher and is prepared to work for it, as Indra was. This ends the quoted interpretation and explanation of the story of Indra and Virochana. I have used this lengthy quote for several reasons. First, it beautifully describes our own human condition. As we are, we must fearlessly step onto the spiritual path according to our individual capacity. We may be together on the spiritual path, but ultimately we have to walk alone. It is said, the alone with the alone. Yet we need to follow the guidance of an experienced teacher of the way. Follow the instruction of our spiritual teacher and see what happens. We cannot and should not take on spiritual practices in our own way at least not without spiritual instruction. To do this is a trick of the ego, that horrible ego. We must think we are fit, but we are not. We need a teacher in order to build a firm and lasting foundation. The spiritual teacher or guru can see where we are on the spiritual path. He or she can help us overcome any obstacles we may encounter along the way. Second, this is just a story. We should not compare ourselves to either Varuna or Indra. We are ourselves, and our path is our own. The temptation of comparison, even in our daily lives and experiences, is a distraction or obstacle. Be alert. Be aware of the tricks of the mind and the ego. Follow the examples of the wise seekers after truth. Yes, but know their examples serve to inspire us to walk confidently on our spiritual path. But really speaking, after hearing their wonderful teachings, we have to dive deep and find out the truth for ourselves. Both discouragement and elation belong to the realm of the pairs of opposites and may cause us to get stuck along the way. Rise above both by being neutral. Be the witness. This will only, By being the witness consciousness, we will succeed. To have purity, patience, and perseverance with respect to our spiritual goal is very important. These will help us stay strongly and firmly in the spiritual direction we are going. Avoid being dogmatic. This is also a trap. We should appreciate and salute all spiritual approaches as we meet them along the way. Keep going till the goal is reached. Another Swamiji instruction. Take inspiration, but be not distracted by it. Say neti neti, not this, not this. Follow these simple steps, and we will reach a successful end to our spiritual quest. The wise say the spiritual path is sharp as the edge of a razor and difficult to tread. Do not be afraid. Continue on with faith and confidence. The more we practice, the more light will come to us, and we will see that the spiritual path becomes smoother and smoother. Our illumined teachers assure us every step of the way, we can do it. We must listen to them. As Swami Vivekananda says, experience is the only teacher, but we must not get stuck in any experience. We must go forward, move on, learn from experience, and then move on without discouragement or elation. Don't get stuck anywhere. Be able to attach and detach without getting stuck anywhere. 1 ounce of practice is worth 1,000 pounds of theory. True religion is not talk or doctrines or theories. Religion does not consist in erecting temples or building churches or attending public worship. Religion consists of realization. We must realize God, feel God, talk to God. That is religion. We see ourselves as only ordinary mortal human beings. We feel weak and imperfect and vulnerable to the forces of nature, which are outside of ourselves. We are ignorant of the real me. My true reality is different from the ego, that which identifies the body and the mind. The ego then serves as a barrier or covering of the real me. This ego, says Sri Ramakrishna, needs to be ripened. The Sanskrit word for our true nature or the divine self is Atman. That is the only spiritual part of the human personality. Spiritual means not material. Both the body and the mind are material. The body, which is made up of material particles, may be relatively easy to understand, but the mind? It may be a little harder to understand that the mind is also material, just more subtle material than the body. We can see the body through the five senses, but the mind we cannot see in that way. The mind, however, can only be felt. So it is said to be material because we are aware of it. The mind is a very powerful tool in our lives. This is why our spiritual teachers tell us that everything depends upon the mind. You read Holy Mother saying that, "My child, everything depends upon the mind." As we look deeply into ourselves, we see that this is a fact of our experience. When the mind is purified by moral and spiritual practices, it can bring us to freedom and lead us to spiritual realization. Vedanta teaches the pure mind and the Atman are one and the same. In the end, we realize that we have always been free. We have simply forgotten our true selves as being divine. As we have seen earlier, our sense organs are limited. They are objects in a material world. The body and the mind are similar and give us similar experiences. Both the body and mind change from day to day. They are both subject to illness. Both get tired and need rest, like that. The body and mind, says Swami Vivekananda, are different, but the difference is not in kind, but in degree. Both body and mind are material, but the body is gross matter, while the mind is subtle matter. It is said that both the body and the mind cover the Atman, the divine within us. That is why our true nature becomes hidden and cannot be seen. At least not right now. The goal in our lives then is and should be to remove this covering. Our Vedanta teachers assure us that we can and eventually will do this if we so choose by being strong and unafraid of our choices. Vedanta teaches that the only difference between an unillumined person and an illumined person is steadfastness. The illumined person is called the person of steady wisdom. Our wisdom wavers every now and again, but it will become steady if you just keep practicing. The illumined person has flashes of the inner light, and then more flashes, and then it becomes steady. We have flashes, more flashes, and more flashes, and more flashes, and then it becomes steady. The viewpoints of each, the illumined and the unillumined person, are totally different. One acts in apparent bondage, the other acts in true and eternal freedom. In his very body or her very body. You have to understand this. The illumined person doesn't necessarily go out of the world as we know it. The illumined person is in the world, but sees it differently than we may see it. There may be somebody here who is illumined. I hope so, but I'm not. And I'm just studying what and talking about what I've read and heard and through my practices. Swami Vivekananda says, until the truth has come through one who has had realization from one who has perceived it in himself or herself, it cannot become fruitful. Books cannot give it. Arguments cannot establish it. Truth comes unto him who knows the secret of it. Swamiji taught practical Vedanta by taking the ancient Vedanta teachings out of the forest ashramas and making them understandable and relevant to our everyday lives in this day and age. One of the greatest of his teachings is that the goal of human life is to experience the oneness of all things. He made the ancient Vedanta teachings applicable to our modern age. There is an incident in Swamiji's life during which he was with the master, Sri Ramakrishna, at Dakshineshwar. One day Ramakrishna tried to instruct Naran, the future Swami Vivekananda. He was also called Narendra. Ramakrishna told Vivekananda of the individual soul with Brahman and the oneness of Brahman with the individual soul. After hearing Sri Ramakrishna's explanation, Narendra said to Hazra, another devotee of Sri Ramakrishna, how can this be? The jug is God, this cup is God, and we too are God? Nothing can be more preposterous. On hearing Naran's laughter, Ramakrishna came out of his room in an altered state of consciousness and said, hello there, what are you talking about? Then he touched Naran and went into samadhi. Naran recalled what happened afterward. The magic touch of the master that day immediately brought a wonderful change in my mind. I was astounded to find that really there was nothing in the universe but God. I saw it quite clearly, but kept silent to see whether the impression would last. But it did not abate in the course of the day. I returned home, but here too, everything, the food, the plate, the person who served, and even myself, was nothing but that oneness. I ate a morsel or two and sat still. I was startled by my mother's words. Why do you sit still? Finish your meal. And then I began to eat. But all the while, whether eating or lying down or going to college, I had the same experience. While walking on the street, I noticed cabs driving, but I did not feel inclined to move out of the way. I felt the cabs and myself to be one. After some days, when I became normal again, I realized that I must have had a glimpse of the advaitic, the non-dual experience, the non-dual state. Then it struck me that the words of the Vedanta scriptures were not false. Thenceforth, I could not deny the conclusions of the advaitic philosophy. This is from the book Swami Vivekananda on himself. Now, whether or not we believe Swamiji's experience to be true, we must admit that it is extraordinary and beyond belief as we know it now. However, we should remember that Swamiji's experience is possible and even inevitable for all of us. All we should be is brave and strong to see what was a fact for Swamiji can become a fact for us all. Vedanta teaches that we can become masters of ourselves by realizing the truth of our being. Swamiji says that we seem to be walking in dreams. Dreams are all right in the dream mind, but he says as soon as we want to grasp a dream, it is gone. Why? Not that it was false, but because it is beyond the power of reason, the power of the intellect, to comprehend it. Everything in this life is so vast that the intellect is nothing in comparison with it. The divine reality refuses to be bound by the laws of the intellect. It laughs at the bondage the intellect wants to spread around it. And a thousandfold more so, it is the case with the human soul. We ourselves. This is the greatest mystery of the universe. And in addition to the bondage of the intellect, what to say of the bondage of the ego, our senses, our sense of I, our self-identity, and our identity with all? What is the ego identified with? Ask yourself, what is my ego identified with? Does it cling to objects of the material world, or does it cling to God? The ego itself is an object. How it changes from minute to minute. It thinks, I am this, I am that. But it does not stop to consider that the truth of the matter is that ego itself is bound. Think about it. As an unripe ego, which some of us are, right? As an unripe ego, we feel ourselves as an entity in the material universe. We say, I am this and I am that. Even this and that we think and feel are a result of our individual worldview. And each one of us has our own individual worldview. That means each one of us is great in his or her own place. That's another famous quote from who else? Swami Vivekananda. Do we ever consider that we are not who we think we are? The ripe ego identifies itself with God, with the divine, thereby finding there is a greater happiness, a greater state of being than what we have been experiencing. It is the same for all of us, more or less. Who do we think we are? I keep asking this, but I'm asking myself too. It's important to ask this question. Truth of the matter is, the greater majority of human beings do not know the answer to this question. Let us want to be that person who wants to know the truth of one's own being, realize that truth, and manifest the oneness we discover in our everyday life. Let us spiritualize everyday life until we realize we are all beings and are truly divine and have always been divine. Very important. We have always been divine from the very beginning. Who am I? Right in this moment, right in this here and now, we are divine. I keep repeating myself, but I need to hear this. Vedanta teaches that what we think, we become. What we think, we become. How we see ourselves is shaped by the way we think. Think about it. This is true in all experiences of human life. This moment is the only moment. This time is the right time, here and now. Really, there is no past and no future. There is only the eternal now. This may kind of sound woo-woo or Moran or New Agey, but Swami Vivekananda has said that himself. And if the New Age isn't Swami Vivekananda, I don't know what is. We have to find a way to detach ourselves from past and future and live in the present moment. Who am I now? Who was I in the past? And who will I be in the future? We are the same one through all these, past, present, and future. We see we have always been the same reality. Freedom comes with the thought and then the realization that I am the infinite. Be steady in this thought and become free. Let spiritual life be the dominant life. Be alert. Be mindful in all experiences in life and see the divine in everything. This is holistic living, clean living. Become a child of God. Become yourself as you really are, right here and right now, in this life, in this body. Swami Vivekananda, in his illumined lecture, The Open Secret, puts all these thoughts in a nutshell. He says, whichever way we turn in trying to understand things in their reality, if we analyze far enough, we find that at last we come to a peculiar state of things, seemingly a contradiction, something which our reason cannot grasp and yet is a fact. We take up something, we know it is finite, but as soon as we begin to analyze it, it leads us beyond our reason, and we never find an end to all its qualities, its possibilities, its powers, its relations. It has become infinite. Take even a common flower. That is finite enough. But who is there that can say he knows or she knows all about the flower? There is no possibility of anyone's getting to the end of the knowledge about that one flower. The flower has become infinite. The flower, which was finite to begin with, take a grain of sand, analyze it. We start with the assumption that it is finite. All the same, we have looked upon it as finite. The flower is similarly treated as finite, as a finite something. So with all our thoughts and our experiences, physical and mental, we begin, we may think, on a small scale and grasp them as little things. But very soon, they elude our knowledge and plunge into the abyss of the infinite. And the greatest and first thing perceived is ourselves. We are also in the same dilemma about existence. We exist. We see we are finite beings. We live and die. Our horizon is narrow. Our little bodies are just held together, ready to go to pieces at a moment's notice. We know that. In the region of action, how powerless we are. Our will is being thwarted at every turn. So many things we want to do, and how few of them can we do? In practical daily life, we are hurt by small things. We are enslaved by little beings. How difficult it is to believe that we are infinite beings. In the midst of all this misery and trouble, when a little thing may throw us off, it must be my care to believe that I am infinite. And the first is that we are. And that consciously or unconsciously, we are all searching for that something which is infinite. We are always seeking for something that is free. This is to be heard of, then to be thought upon, and then to be meditated upon. When the hands work, the mind should repeat, I am it, I am it. Tat Twamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, whatever way works for you. Think of it, dream of it, until it becomes bone of your bones and flesh of your flesh, until all the hideous dreams of littleness, of weakness, or misery and evil have entirely vanished, and no more can the truth be hidden from us, even for a moment. Swamiji says that we may say that we are hypnotizing ourselves. No, we are already hypnotized by design. Remember, the Supreme Being has turned our senses outwards. We don't have a chance, but there is a way out. So we come to see and are convinced that all life is cyclic. We see this condition to be a fact of experience in our everyday life. Is that not so? The goal of human life is to break out of this cycle of birth and death and to be free from this relative world, thereby reclaiming our true identity, our true nature, the oneness with all creation. Our goal is to identify with the divine as it exists here and now. Who do we think we are? This is a basic or core question. It goes together with another basic question: who am I? By implementing time-tested spiritual practices in our everyday lives, we are to work with more and more strength and fearlessness. This is practical Vedanta. Putting the Vedanta teachings into practice leads to the realization of who we are. Through these practices, we break free of all apparent bondage and enter into spiritual living, a living that makes sense and answers all our questions about our existence. Human beings in general want a purpose of life. We want fulfillment in life. This is a basic urge. But most of the purpose remains elusive or unattainable because there is really no fulfillment in everyday experience as we may know it now in the material world. But let's face it, if we're all devotees, we naturally want to believe we wouldn't be here if we didn't believe or want to become better and better. And we want to believe that we are living a spiritual life. We may have setbacks, but so what? I mean, we're together. We all have the same ideal, I think. And we all care for each other as devotees. I don't see myself as different from any one of you. At least I believe that. I'm convinced of that. I may not have realized that. But I want it, and I want you to want it and to have it for yourselves as well. There exists within us a truth that goes beyond that which we are accustomed to. Swamiji says that the basic yearning of the human heart is to transcend. One Swami who has passed away some years ago, his favorite saying was, accept, realize, and transcend. It's a beautiful teaching. Swamiji says that the basic yearning of the human heart is to transcend, to go beyond our human limitations. We want to be free. Only that freedom seems to be constantly beyond our reach. We most often do not know what we are seeing. We do not know what we are feeling. We are out of touch and cannot seem to get in touch. But this really doesn't matter if you're a devotee. You've seen people who have actually realized what we're talking about today, and you want to be like them. Just keep thinking those thoughts and you'll get there. We are told there is a spiritual condition that is more luminous. Let us seek that higher state of being and be free. This is my earnest prayer for all of us today. Thank you. Yananim Sarada Devim Ramakrishna Jagat Gurum Padapadme Tayo Shritwa Pranamami Muhur Muhu. O Mother Sarada, Goddess Divine, and Ramakrishna, the teacher of all, taking shelter at your feet, I salute you both again and again.